Okay, so we're going to talk about the mitzvah of maaser. So there's a relationship between the obligation of tzedakah and the obligation of maaser. So regarding the mitzvah of tzedakah, there is both a mitzvah aseh, a positive mitzvah, and a mitzvah lo taseh, a prohibition associated with giving a person charity. And this is found in Sefer Devarim, Perek Tezvav, Psukim Zayin and Ches. The pasuk says, Ki yebacha evyon me'achad achecha be'achad sharecha bar'tzecha asher Hashem elokecha no selach. When there should be a poor person among your brethren in one of your cities in the land which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you, lo sa'ameitz es levavcha v'lo sikpot es yadcha. Don't close your heart. Don't strengthen your heart and close your fists from giving. In other words, don't refuse to give. Ki pasoach tiftach. Rather, you should open. Ki patoach tiftach es yad chalo. Rather, you should open your hearts, and you should open your hands, and you should open your hearts to this individual. And you should give him whatever he is missing. So that my first point, very simply, is that there's a prohibition, and there's a prohibition, and then there's a mitzvah saseh, a positive obligation to help a poor person. Now the Gemara in Bava Basra, Daf Tes Amud Aleph, states that the minimum amount required to fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah is 1/3 of a shekel per year. That's like not a lot. Even if it's whatever it is, I saw in the modern day tzedakah books, it's like a few dollars. This is based on a pasuk in Nehemiah, Perek Yud, pasuk Lamed Gimel, which references giving a third of a shekel. We'll get to a maaser in a bit. This is codified in Shulchan Aruch, Yoredeya, Simon, Reish Mem Tes Seif Beis. The Aruch HaShulchan suggests that there are 250 prutos, 256 pennies in a 1/3 shekel, which corresponds to the number of non-Shabbos and Yom Tov days every year, one pruta per day. Okay, so you have this, the point is, even if you're really poor, you have to give this minimal amount per year. Okay, but what for our purposes, the Gemara and the Mefarshim, the Gemara and the commentaries discuss the obligation to give Maaser, which is 1/10 of your earnings to charity. Now, according to the Torah, on the surface, it seems that there is no Torah obligation to give 1/10 of your earnings. If you were in the old days, people were farmers, and they would essentially dedicate 20% of the crops, of the yield of their crops, for various holy purposes. They would first, let's say, separate truma, which we generally assume is about 2% of your yield. And then they would give, of the remaining 98%, they'd give 10% maaser rishon to the Levi. And then they would have about 89% of their yield left, and they would give about 10% of that during in the Shemitah cycle, right? There are 7 years in the Shemitah cycle. The seventh year, they're not working. So in the first, second, fourth, and fifth year, they would take that 10%, and they would have to eat the crops in Yerushalayim or redeem it and use the money in Yerushalayim. And on the third and sixth year of the Shemitah cycle, you would have to give 10% of your yield to the poor person. Okay? So in other words, the only clear reference to this concept of giving a tenth to a poor person, the obligation, the only time that the Torah tells that you have to do it, is if you're a farmer, and it's the third and sixth year of the Shemitah cycle. So you first give 1/10 to the Levi, you first give Truma, then you give 1/10 to the Levi, called Maaser Rishon, and then you give Maaser Ani to the poor person. It is true that there's references to Avram Avinu when he meets Malki Tzedek Melch Shalem, and it says that he gave a tenth. And there's also a reference of Yaakov Avinu when he's fleeing from Esav, and he tells the Kadosh Baruch Hu, tells God, if you protect me, v'chol asher titen li aser asfedulach, I'll give you a tenth. But the only time that there is an explicit obligation of giving, the only time you have this explicit obligation of giving a tenth is if you are a farmer and we're talking about crops. So there are at least And the truth is, but there's also a blessing associated with Maaser. I'm sure some of us are familiar with the line Aser, where the Torah says Aser to Aser. Again, this refers to tithing your produce. But the Gemara in Tanis Daf Tzadi Daf Tesamid Aleph states that Aser to Aser means Aser Bishvil Shatis Asher. You should tithe so that you'll become wealthy and that we'll be blessed. You'll be blessed with wealth if we annually tithe our income. That's a blessing, and in fact, this is not really our discussion, but normally speaking, you're not supposed to test the Kadosh Baruch Hu, you're not supposed to test God. So the Gemara here discusses maybe when it comes, because the Torah says, Lo sinasu es Hashem, you're not supposed to test Hashem, tzedakah might be the exception. Okay, I'm not here to talk about blessings and how to know whether that happens or not. There is a statement in Chazal that we will be blessed with wealth, but I'm here just to focus on the halacha, or perhaps the minhag, of Maaser Ksafim. There are at least three different approaches to understand the nature of the obligation to give Maaser. Tosfos in Tanis Daf Tesamid Aleph cites the Sifrei, which seems to indicate that the obligation is a Torah obligation. It has to do with there's an extra word or two in the Pasuk, and therefore there is a view out there that it's a Torah obligation to give Maaser. Again, very important. There is a mitzvah to give tzedakah. There is a clear mitzvah to give tzedakah to the poor. It's different question whether you have to tithe your produce, give 10%. So let me make that very clear. So the Tosfos seems to indicate that the obligation is a Torah obligation. Others hold that it's a rabbinic obligation. The Taz and Yeredeia, for example, believes that it's a rabbinic obligation. And others hold it's a custom. The Bach, for example, many poskim hold that this is the majority opinion, that it's a custom. Again, let me be very clear. Just because something's a custom, it doesn't mean it's not appropriate to try to do this. Some of us have heard of what? Kitnios. Have any of you heard of Kitnios? That's a custom. Ashkenazim do that. So just because something's a custom, but it's not necessarily as strong as a rabbinic obligation, it's not as strong as a Torah obligation. It may depend on you know, what custom how you want to formulate your custom, as we'll see. There actually is a fourth opinion, which I didn't write in the outline, which is maybe not even a custom, but called a neder. It's like a vow that you should take upon, that we take upon ourselves. What's between a neder, a vow, and a custom? The difference might be if your parents had the custom of giving Maaser, does that obligate you or not? My point here is the following: I'll give you sort of the ending, at least the way Rabbi Willick. There, I spoke to a different Rabbanim, Rabbi Willick, who I speak to a lot about these things. He just says, try to give as much as you can. He says it's a custom. It's very hard to calculate all this. We'll try to explain the different calculations. It is a custom, but you try to give as much as you can. Be well aware that we have this bracha of wealth if we do this. And obviously, there's a lot of emunah associated with giving tzedakah and giving maaser. But I will tell you the different, whether it's a custom or an obligation, may relate to what you count as income and what you count as maaser, which is obviously the main part of the shiur. I want to point out an interesting comment that the Aruch HaShulchan has. The Aruch HaShulchan in Yeredeia, Sibud Reish Mem Tes, Saif Beis at Gimel, asks the following question. See, on the one hand, let's say you only have to give a tenth. But the Torah also says if a poor person comes to you, then you have to give him what he needs. So like, what if that's more than a tenth? What are you supposed to do if there are a lot of poor people? How do you relate the halacha or the minhag of giving maaser with the fact that that if a poor person comes to you, then you have to give him you know whatever he needs? So how do you sort of balance the two? So first of all, you can say maybe you don't know if a poor person is coming to you, he's coming to a bunch of people, so you don't necessarily have to give everything, and you could assume that he's collecting from a lot of different people, maybe. The Aruch HaShulchan explains that even though the Torah, it's an interesting position, says even though the Torah seems to obligate us to donate as much funds as necessary to help every poor person, the Torah would not command us to give everything we have to the poor so that we would become poor ourselves. There was a point in time when the Jews were in Eretz Yisrael and they were in a good financial state, and the number of poor people was small. At that point in time, they were able to fulfill the Torah's mandate. Can you believe it? There was a time when there was enough money around to deal with the poor people. However, once we were exiled and the number of poor people increased, the number of wealthy people decreased, therefore, even if the wealthy people would donate all their funds, that still wouldn't be enough to support all the poor people. So we established this mitzvah or minhag of Maaser. In other words, it's a very interesting position, the Aruch HaShulchan says. I don't know if everyone agrees to this, but it's a very fascinating position, where he says, essentially, that Maaser was created because there was no way for us to give everything that was necessary to poor people and still be able to live on our own. It was impossible because we weren't wealthy enough in order to support everyone. So therefore, they created something. Okay, at least give one tenth. And you do not have to tithe your income if your expenses are greater than your income, or to the extent that your miser will make you dependent on charity. The Ramah writes this in Yoredeya Simon Reish and Aleph Saif Gimel. A big question is the following. Let's say, for example, let's say we assume you earn $100,000 of income, so you should give $10,000. I'm making up that number. But your expenses are $100,000, so you can't give anything. So does that mean next year, if you earn $200,000, you have extra money, do you owe the $10,000 from the first year? So many poskim, and this is found in a work called B'marei HaBazak, this is a chuvos put out by Kola Eretz Chemda. It's a religious Zionist Kola with really top Talmidei Chachamim, Yosef Carmel. So they have said that, again, because Maaser is only a custom, you can start whenever you wish, and you need not give retroactively for income of a previous year if it's too difficult. So this is an introduction. I still have to talk about income / earnings subject to Maaser, payments and donations that count towards Maaser, and the hierarchy of tzedakah causes. So, if anyone has any questions on my introduction, I'm going to pause for a second. Does anyone have any questions? We're good? Okay.
Just what's the definition of Maaser, and what was the definition of tzedakah, if you just have to tell one word?
Tzedakah is charity, and Maaser is tithing. Is giving a tenth, of your income to charity. We have to define what income is, and we have to define what charity counts towards Maaser, or what donations, what payments, what services counts towards Maaser. Tzedakah means you have to give charity. So the minimum is one third of a shekel, which is very little.
Okay. But even poor people have to give that.
Correct. Yes.
Right. Maaser not necessarily,
right. You don't have to give Maaser if it's going to make you poor. You don't have to give. You have to give this basic, one-third shekel, which is a few dollars. But you don't have to give. You don't have to give Maaser if as a result, you're going to have to collect charity. Okay.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
For charity, is that also what she said? Isn't that also, that could be not necessarily money?
Yes. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about goods and services. Does it fulfill, if for goods, for services, do services count towards tzedakah? I would imagine so. Certainly goods do. I would imagine that services also count. They certainly count if it's for a poor person towards Maaser. So I would imagine it also as well for tzedakah. Okay. But again, we're only taught in practice, it's not really such an issue because it's the bare minimum of tzedakah is if you give $10, you're yotze, for the year. So I'm saying is everyone's giving $10, at least. The question is, what about more than that? Okay, so we're going to talk about income and earnings. Now you're going to see that there are many, many different opinions. This is a guideline. And we're going to see that a lot of people probably do not have to give tzedakah, especially young couples who are struggling to pay yeshiva tuition, certainly. So let's see. Income and earnings subject to Maaser. So all the poskim say that, most of the poskim say that only net income is subject to Maaser, not gross income. In other words, whatever you're getting for your, whatever. And by the way, I'm giving you sort of, probably a lot of what I'm saying, there's some dispute. I think this is a dominant view. This is a reasonable view. I spoke to a few rabbanim about this, so I think this is a reasonable perspective. from a lot of the different tzedakah books out there in terms of the rules here. Everyone says it's not, you know, stuff that's taxed that you don't get, you know, and you know, the money that's taxed, you only get what you get net, not gross income. There's a shaila about Social Security, maybe. That's like a shaila. It seems that most poskim say that you would be, let's say if you're paying sales tax or real estate tax, you might argue it's the same thing, but that's different. No, that's personal expenses. In other words, income is money that you get income and then you pay expenses. So we have to see what you can deduct from your income. So number one is only net income is subject to Maaser, not gross income. If you put money in retirement accounts, so generally speaking, most poskim seem to say that if you put money in the 401k, the accounts as income when you withdraw the money. Okay, you don't have to take it out. So if you put money there, you can do it when you withdraw the money. Money received as inheritance counts as maaser, even if the one who bequeathed the money separated the maaser himself. So let's say you inherit money from your parents and they were makbid in the midst of maaser. So since you're earning it right now, like new, that's like a new form of earning. So all the poskim say you have that does count as maaser. If, let's say, before a parent died, they say they bequeath $1 million and they take out $100,000 for maaser, so then maybe you don't have to. But even though it was maaser before, it's similar to what? It's similar to if I give maaser, let's say I earn income, right? And I separate maaser and I have $100 left. I already separate maaser from that money and then I give it to you. I don't know, I buy something from you, I give it to you. So you would also have to take off maaser from it. So anytime a new person gets it, so that would be, they'd be subject to maaser. Monetary gifts are generally subject to maaser unless it was given for a specific purpose. Let's say someone gives you $200 to buy a dress. So the distinction is, since maaser is generally assumed to be a custom by many poskim, and since the Rishonim, when they spoke about giving maaser, and when they talked about what kind of income you have to give maaser on, generally speaking, we're not talking, the Rishonim didn't talk about non-monetary gifts. In other words, let's say you get, I don't know how it works, right? If you get a non-cash prize, and you win in a contest a non-cash prize, that might be taxable, I think. That might be taxable. But from a maaser standpoint, we only tax, again, most poskim, or many poskim, and you will say, at least in America, at least. In America, many poskim will say, the accepted position in America is that the value of non-cash gifts do not count as income. And therefore, even if an extension of that is, if someone gives you money, but they say, I want you specifically to buy this item. So it's not like you can use it whatever you want. So that's also not subject to maaser. So it's as if they gave you the gift. Okay? If they say, I'm giving you this money free and clear, so then that would be subject to a maaser. Right? Like if you want to give a child an allowance, so I mean, again, is a child poor or not, but if you give a child allowance and you say, I want you to use that money to buy something, specific with it. Let's say you say, I'm going to give you $10. You can buy whatever you want for $10. If you give him $10, he's going to buy. But let's say he says, I want to buy this item for $10. So then you would not have to take maaser for it. If, for example, you tell him, but nice thing to do is say, here, I'm going to give you $10. Take $1, give it to tzedakah, and you know maybe take $4 and buy something you want with it, and take $5 and save it. That's like a parenting. That's a separate question. Teaching the kids about saving money. But again, if you give money for, and you say you have to spend it on X, so then it's not, then the accepted position in America is that non-cash gifts do not count as income, and therefore the as well, if you give a monetary gift for a specific purpose, so that would also not count as income. Profits from stock or mutual fund sales, so that counts as income when they're sold and the profit is realized, right? When you get the cash out, similar to 401k, a retirement, you know, fund. Some poskim hold, okay? So this obviously is a biggie. Some poskim hold that you can deduct personal expenses from income. Most poskim hold that you cannot. Because think about it, if that obviously is a major difference. So again, if someone, I can't tell you something definitively. That's why Rabbi Willick said, just give as much sukkah as you can. Because it's hard. If you want to do a calculation of Meiser, if you can, it would be great not to count personal expenses. But there are reliable poskim. That's obviously a major difference, right? Let's say you earn $200,000, and then you have to pay $180,000 of personal expenses, right? So you have $20,000 left over at the end of the year. So if you deduct, so if you don't deduct personal expenses, so then the Meister would be $20,000. If you deduct personal expenses, then what is it? Then basically all you have is $20,000. All you have is Meister off $20,000, which is $2,000. So this obviously is a major. There's what to rely on. Again, it seems most poskim reject this position. But again, in a pinch, let's say someone is struggling, a young couple, they want to do Meiser in some respect, but it's very hard for them right now, and they want to do something, so maybe they can rely on this. If you have the means, you have the ability, so we try not to rely on it. It's hard to give hard and fast rules, but that's generally what we hold in terms of personal expenses, okay? We're going to see that there are some payments, I think some of us do, depending on our situation, which we can count towards Meiser money, which may alleviate some of the burden. So I wrote this outline based on some questions that Dina gave me, and I tried to give, common situations of income. If anyone has any questions now regarding income or earnings subject to Meiser, just on this topic, not what payments. On the topic of income and earnings, do you have any questions? We're good?
Do you calculate it per, like, paycheck?
That's a good question. So there are different people.
How do you do that?
Yeah, so different people have different ways of doing it. You could do it at the end of the year. Some people have a special fund that right away, that like whatever their paycheck is, they make a special bank account for it. I think there's some flexibility in terms of how to do that. You could do it every paycheck. You can also do it every year. There's a lot of fluidity here because, like I said, most poskim hold that it's a minhag. So the minhag is how you want to do it. So I'm going to give you a range of options. It's nice to try to see if we can do something, right? But it's a good question. They say it's like a good, people want to make sure they're going to separate people who have the means, and they want to make sure that they're going to separate Meiser. So it's a really good idea to, for every paycheck, you separate. Or what you can do is, let's say at the end of the year, you take your tax return, and you see, I don't know if it'll calculate 100%, though. But if there's a way where you can, you calculate your net income at the end of the year, if there's a way to easily calculate all your deductions, you can also do that as well. Okay? Okay. So let's go on. Now, payments and donations that are counted as Meiser. So if it's directed to the poor, that's the best. The best kind of tzedakah, the tzedakah that definitely counts as Meiser is to the poor. There's no question about that. If you give non-cash gifts given to the poor, that also counts. You give them whatever, clothing, food, I think it's Miriam's question, that also counts as Meiser to the poor. What about services? So many poskim say that donation of services also counts, but it would be the cheapest amount that the person would pay, and only 90% of the value would count. So in other words, let's say that you are a high-end electrician, and this person has no light. This poor person has no lights in his house. So you charge $300 an hour, okay? But they can get someone for $100 an hour. I have no idea what electricians charge, so I'm making up these numbers, okay? So you can't say, well, since I charge $300 an hour, so I'm going to count $300 an hour for my services. You would say, what would this poor, again, he's poor, so what would he pay for these electrical, these kind of services? So let's say you would get $100, right? So let's say for 1 hour's work, you get $100. So you can't donate the full $100, but let's say you get $100. Then, right, if you would give 10% of that to Meiser, assuming you give Meiser, so you would count only 90% of the value. So donation of services could also count as Meiser. Okay? What about non-obligatory mitzvos? What about a shul, yeshiva, a mikvah, building fund? So it's interesting, this might sound surprising, the Maharil is cited in the Ramah, Yoredeya, Simon Reish Mem Tes Sif Aleph, says it doesn't count. In other words, there are many Rishonim who feel that Maaser, based on the sources, that they believe that Maaser is specific to poor people. Okay? Obviously, if we say that too loud, right, we would not have communal institutions. Okay. No, but whatever, you give it besides that, whatever the case is. That's the Maharil says, the Maharam, in the Maharshal, and the Shach, in Yoredeya, Simon Reish Mem Tes Saif Gimel, writes that it does count. And this is the custom. This is the custom. The custom is not to be strict like the Ramah. The custom is to get that money that you give to a shul, yeshiva, mikvah, building fund, that this counts towards Maaser. The preference is for poor people. I've seen in some of the tzedakah books, they say maybe give a half to poor people. They have certain things. The preference certainly is with poor people. But again, let me be very clear, we're talking about non-obligatory mitzvos, right? Right? There's no personal obligation to contribute to a... So we're only talking about if it's a non-obligatory building fund. In other words, if you have to give a yeshiva tuition, you have to give this as a building fund, so that may not count. It has to be something that you are not obligated to do. Okay, either by halacha or by whatever it is. Like, you know, you want to send your kids to school. We're going to talk about whether yeshiva tuition counts. But let's say this is something that you have to do. Let's say if you want to send your child to yeshiva, and let's assume that if we hold that yeshiva tuition doesn't count towards Maaser, then the building fund would be the same. If they truly make it optional, in other words, I don't care how you deal with it from the tax perspective, so that the accountants can deal with that. But if it's in effect obligatory, so that is an obligatory mitzvah, so then that would not necessarily count. If it's a personal mitzvah obligation. Let's say you buy an esrog, you buy your own tefillin, or matanos levionim. It also doesn't count. Maaser is you're giving money for something which is not obligatory. But anything in excess of the basic obligation of matanos levionim does count. So for example, matanos levionim, that means what, give gifts to the poor person on Purim. So some say you could fulfill that mitzvah with $1 or $5. So if you give $50 matanos levionim or $100 matanos levionim, so you can count $95 of that as Maaser. Okay? So let's try to give some common examples that relate to what we just said. Okay, so let's talk about... So in other words, the key is that Maaser are things that are not obligatory. So what about financial support for children? So the Gemara in Ksuvos, Daf Samech Hamad Bey, states that every father has an obligation to support any child under the age 6 years and under. So all you parents who are supporting your children over the age of six, you guys are simply amazing. Okay? You're just going above and beyond what is required. It's just a wonderful thing. And so that being said, so therefore anything under six, you don't have to count towards Maaser. There is a dispute whether we can use Maaser funds for support of children over the age of six. Ramosha Feinstein, in one of his tshuvos dealing with this, and Evan Oezer, Chelek Aleph, Simon Kuf Vav, ruled that since the average person supports his children until they are self-sufficient, and that's sort of like, that's what the minhag hamedina is, that's the custom of society, that's maybe even based on law, they have to support the kid until they're 18, we cannot use Maaser funds for that purpose. Once the child no longer lives at home, and certainly once the child has reached working age, a parent may use Maaser funds if the child is financially struggling and needs assistance. So, for example, let's assume that I have two children. Well, let's say I have five children, but let's say my oldest two children. One of my children is going to be a doctor, and, you know, hopefully she'll make a lot of money. So for me to give her money, and she's living, you know, she's living pretty, you know, so for that, maybe that may not count towards Meiser. But let's say I have a son who, for some reason, he did an internship in Ernst & Young, and then he decides, oh, for some crazy reason, I want to go into chinuch. And he doesn't make a lot of, he's not going to earn a lot of money. So if I were to help him, assuming that they're struggling, that money can be used for Meiser. And of course, anyone else who wants to contribute, he will gladly take. No. But anyway, so the point is, Moshe Feinstein, the point is like this, that when it comes to children, that this I saw, there's a Rav Melamed in his Sefer Pinini Halacha writes, it's very important. Like, if your kids are basically, if you have, you know, grown kids, and they're doing well, they're doing decently, right? They're not living frugally, and you want to give gifts to them, and they're doing well, so that's not Meiser. But if you have children who mamash are struggling, you have to help them pay the rent, and help them, you know, whatever it is, buy things for the kids, so that it could be counted towards Meiser. Where you draw the line is very hard. These things, I'm giving you generalities. Where you draw the line is very, very difficult. Probably to some extent, I would say that if the child can live, you know, our society, what are we? We're upper middle class. So it's like, it's hard to know, like, you know, what point is a child considered poor? What do they have to have so they're not considered poor? These things are very hard to determine. But in general, if a child cannot really, you know, they're struggling financially, whether they're married or not. Once they're not at home anymore and they're struggling financially, so and you helping them, so that counts towards Meiser. But if they're generally self-sufficient, if they're generally okay and you're just giving gifts, because you want to give gifts to the grandkids or whatever, so then that would probably not count towards Meiser. Similarly, when it comes to tuition for children, Moshe Feinstein in Igros Moshen, Yoredea Chelik Bey Simon Kuf Yud Gimel suggests that in a country where the government requires all children to attend school, it would be forbidden to use Meiser funds for children's tuition, because this is an obligation on the parent. The parent must provide child's education. And he writes also, he says, then to put the child in public school, you can't do that because the parent has to care for its child's, you know, religious welfare, well-being. So he's got to send him to a yeshiva. Also, of course, he calls that an obligation. You can debate that point, but I mean, you understand why it's very important the child goes to yeshiva. But he says that this is generally an obligation. Any expenses over and above what the school charges, which help to defray the cost of educating those who cannot pay the standard tuition, may count towards Meiser funds. So for example, let's say the school charges $10,000 and the school tells you that it costs $8,000 to, it really costs $8,000 to educate your child, but it costs an extra $2,000 because we use that, you know, to help for scholarships for other kids. That would be allowed to be used for Meiser money. Like regarding a building fund, so if they need the building for the kids, so I know that doesn't seem to be able to be counted if it's an obligation towards Meiser money. If it's, again, if they're calling it a building fund, but they're using it for other things, so that's really the question. Is it really an obligation to educate your children? Or is it really to, you know, help other kids, defray the cost of other kids' tuition, so then that would count towards Meiser funds. Again, by the way, again, if someone wants to keep the laws of Meiser, there probably are those who would say that, again, financial support of children over the age of six, you might be able to count. Again, it's generally a rejected position. But if someone wants to really try to fulfill Meiser to some extent, but feels bad that they can't because of this, so again, you know, there might be room to be lenient, but that doesn't seem to be the dominant view. However, let's say tuition payments for children post-high school tuition should count towards Meiser. Because basically, again, if the child cannot afford, you know, yeshiva or college on their own, so there's a mitzvah both. Number one, to help a poor child who wants to learn Torah, to help him or her learn yeshiva or seminary. So that probably would count toward, you probably could count that towards Maaser. Also, university, to help them get a job. One of the things a parent has to do is to make sure the child has a job so they can pay for them, so they can support themselves. So that probably would count towards Maaser. So again, obviously if you have, you know, you're supporting married children, or you're supporting college, you know, college or yeshiva seminary, so that a lot of that could be used towards Maaser, according to many poskim.
So just for what you were saying about the scholarships for other kids, some schools that I'm aware of have a tuition assistance fee,
right?
It's part of your tuition. It's like an extra $2,000 that you must pay.
Right.
It's all tuition assistance, and it's, I guess, to help people. I think if you're on financial aid, you don't pay that.
Yeah.
But everyone else has to. So it is required.
Yeah.
But it's also for...
Yeah, so I would assume that if there were no kids on scholarship, then they wouldn't have that. They wouldn't have that fee. So for that, I would think that you could count that towards Maaser. Okay. Tuition for grandchildren. So many poskim rule you can use the Maaser funds for grandchildren because that's not an obligation. As much as maybe parents tell the grandparents that it is an obligation, but it's not an obligation, and therefore you can use that as Maaser. You can use it as Maaser funds. Shul membership, shul and yeshiva. This is what I got. Shul membership, shul and yeshiva building funds. I found interesting stuff on this. I found one sefer regarding shul membership. Okay, so there's one said so on the one hand you get benefits by being a shul member. I don't want to spend time trying to evaluate how much benefit you get by being a member of a shul. Because I'm no Gabba Duffer, I'm an interested party. So I saw there's someone quoted Rav Belsky, who said that generally one half to two thirds of, one half of two thirds of shul membership dues, you get something out of it. And the other part is, I don't know what it is, aliyahs, or I don't know what it is, whatever, life cycle events, whatever it is. So you have different... You have, again, you're getting services out of this, whether you like the services or not. Again, these building funds, you're getting these things, you're getting services, and you're buying a service, right? You're buying a service. I would say an appeal is different, right? You don't have to give money to a shul appeal. That is purely optional. Membership, I guess membership is also optional. Technically speaking, you could just come to shul and not become a member. But I think that membership generally, whatever the value is, we don't have to discuss that now. But there's an assumption that you're getting value, you're getting a direct benefit, whether you feel it's 100% of what you pay, 50% of what you pay, you're getting value for that. So and also in terms of the shul yeshiva and building funds, you're also getting value. You're getting a building. You're paying for the building where you're davening in, as opposed to just an appeal. When they have a yisker appeal, you're not getting, again, that's not directly related to any specific benefit that you're getting. It doesn't make a difference. You're not getting additional benefit because you gave more to a yisker appeal or less. So that could be used for Maaser. Again, it's this is a gray area. Some rabbanim have told me that you really shouldn't. Some said, like I said, you can count the shul membership half of the value, and others say, pressing circumstances, it can count towards Maaser. Now, what's interesting is that buying svarim. What's fascinating is this is a historical halacha. The Shach in Yoredei Siman Reish Mem Tes Seif Gimel. And the Taz and Reish Mem Tes Seif Katan Aleph both rule that in times of need you can count buying Sfarim as Maaser. Why is that? So see, that would not necessarily apply now. Why? In the old days, there weren't a lot of books. So when you bought a book, you didn't just buy it for yourself. I don't know if you ever experienced this called they have these WhatsApp groups where they exchange books. That's a shout out, Javi. Okay. So the... Uh, So is that a chat I'm allowed in, Odd, or no? That's probably not. No. That I'm allowed on? Okay. That I'm allowed. Okay. I'm not sure. Okay. So in any case, so in the old days, right, books are very hard to come by. Svarim are very hard to come by. So when you bought a Sefer, right, so then you would let the whole community use it. And therefore, they said in times of need, you can count it as Meiser. Nowadays, it's very difficult to apply that rationale. Unless, of course, let's say you buy some Sfarim. And you were to say, you buy this Sfarim, you say it's mine, and you put it in the Shul, Beis Medrash, Shul Library, or whatever this is, and you say, whoever wants to use it, you leave it. It's mine, but whoever wants to use it can use it anytime they want. But if it's in your or you make it very clear, people come over and people really do come over to use that. You have a special Sefer that no one else can get, and they haven't digitized it. So maybe, but the leniency that you'll find in earlier sources about buying Sfarim counting towards Meiser, the rationale really shouldn't apply nowadays, because nowadays you generally use it for personal use. Okay, what about the charity raffle or the Chinese auction? So Rav Moshe Feinstein, he makes an interesting distinction, Or Chaim, Chelek Dalet, Simon, Ayin Vav Chelek, or Anaf Beis, he rules that you can use the donation if there are an unlimited number of raffle tickets are sold. If limited tickets are sold, then you deduct the value of the ticket. In other words, I think what he's saying is the following. In other words, let's say, if an unlimited number of raffle tickets are sold, so you can't really, your ticket's worth really nothing. If you know, let's give an example. Let's say it's a split the pot, right? So you know only 100 tickets are going to be sold, so you know that you have 1/100th of a chance of getting $5,000. So you could attach a value to that and not count that as Meiser. But if it's just they're selling as many raffle tickets as possible, so then we would say you can count that as Meiser. And then if you win the gift, if you win a cash gift, so then you should separate Meiser from the cash gift. But if it's a non-cash gift, according to the American Post scheme, you don't have to separate Meiser from a non-cash gift. This question was asked to me. What about if you have, if you give Meiser to someone and turn it to be a scam? Like the guy definitely doesn't need tzedakah. Does that count towards Meiser? So I didn't find a lot in the sources about this. There's a Gemara in Bava Basra Daf Tesamun Beis which says that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to reward good people by making sure that when they give charity, then it counts towards that they give charity. Hashem will always make sure that proper people get the charity so you get more reward. And then to wicked people, Hashem will make them get less reward by basically making them give charity to people who are not worthy. Now, you could ask theological questions on that. That's not the purpose of this Gemara for our purposes. For our purposes, it seems that you get less reward from this Gemara if the person to whom you're giving charity is not a worthy recipient. So I asked the Rebbe Willig, and he thought that I didn't find many sources on this. I didn't find any sources that specifically addressed the point. He thought that even though you may not be rewarded as much, right, but that still would count in terms of Meiser. I guess the distinction we made is that when you get reward for what you get reward by helping out a person. But Meiser simply is you are dedicating 10% of your income, however it's defined. You give that away, so this would count even if the person it's a scam, it's not real. So this is a brief overview. We have one more section to go about what counts towards Meiser. Do you have any questions on this topic?
Yeah, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
Going back to sort of towards the beginning of the section where you were saying that it's maybe better to give directly to the poor than to something like a communal institute, whatever, building fund, whatever. Do we also follow that same theory of like it's better to give local whether you're giving to local poor people versus outside, or even maybe like a local building fund versus some other, you know, a different organization?
That's a great question. And that's my final topic. Okay. Hierarchy of tzedakah causes. It's a good question. So I'm going to tell you what I found. I'm going to tell you the conclusion before I tell you other stuff. The conclusion, and what I'm going to tell you, these are general guidelines. I read up on a lot of different sources in both what the Shulchan Aruch says, and there seem to be a lot of inconsistencies that I found within the Shulchan Aruch. And I read some modern day tzedakah books, and I found things that it was difficult for me to reconcile everything. So I called Rabbi Willie, and he told me a great story of Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Shlomo Zalman Orbach, once the Gevir once asked him, he said, "Where should I give my tzedakah money to, my ma'aser money to?" So the Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach said to this Gevir, to this wealthy person, said, "If Hashem wanted me to decide, he would have given me the money." Okay, so his point is, right, Willick's point is, that you can decide, right? Some people, they're passionate about, I don't know, like having a greener world. Some people want to give to poor people. Some people want to give to mikvos. Some people want to give to, to yeshivos. Some people want to give to whatever it is, different things. Deborah, the last couple of bullet points here are general guidelines in terms of priorities that we have found in the sources. But at the end of the day, it's very hard to pin down because there's so many different considerations. The way that I understand it is that here are general values, general guidelines, and then people can pick and whatever whatever they feel passionate about. I also think, just like in life, I once read a beautiful article by Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. A lot of my religious thought, even though I wasn't a Talmud of Yeshivat Har Etzion, a lot of my religious thought is shaped by Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. And he once wrote an article, I read an article of his about specialization versus generalization in Judaism. Is it better to generalize or specialize? Meaning what? Should you spend, I'm giving obviously like a, you know, it may not be a great example. Should you spend a third of your free time in chesed, a third of your free time davening extra, a third of your free time learning, or should you be a generalist, or should you pick one thing that you love, whether it's going to daven extra all the time, or learn extra all the time, or do chesed all the time? Should you be a specialist? And you could make the same argument for tzedakah as well. Should I do a little bit here and there, or should I be passionate in one area? And there are different values, I think. There are different things, that there are probably different values in doing both. There are also questions, which I'm not fully prepared to discuss, about, and there's an interesting discussion about this, which is it better to give all your money to one person or, you know, to a lot of people? Because maybe each act of, on the one hand, if you really can't help anyone, you give everyone a penny, that's not doing, a nickel's not doing much, but if you give it to one person, then you're helping that person, versus every act of charity that you're giving, that's another, you know, that develops your character of generosity. Of course, you know, with the shul started, this program of, you know, giving $18 a month, you know, to, because we don't have a tzedakah box now. So it's interesting that it's good, again, give as much tzedakah as you can, but that's different than every day actually doing the physical act of putting money in the tzedakah box, as opposed to just, because that's, you're not thinking about it. The goal is, you know, thinking about it. There are many different values. But regarding hierarchy, there are generally two different considerations: the recipient and the purpose. Okay? When it comes to the recipient, generally speaking, your family comes first. First your parents, then your children, then your siblings, then other relatives, then your neighbors, then your city. This is found in the Ramah, Yoredeah, Simon, Reish, Nun Aleph, Seif, Gimel. And then those living in Eretz Yisrael. This is the Shach in Reish, Nun Aleph, Seif, Katan, Vav. And those living in Yerushalayim take precedence over those living elsewhere in Eretz Yisrael. This is from the Chasam Sofer, Yoredea, Reish Lamed Gimel, Reish Lamed Daled, and then others. It's interesting, it seems from the Shach, his understanding of the Ramah, is that your neighborhood precedes Eretz Yisrael. So it's very hard to, like, people say, where does Eretz Yisrael come into play? It seems that your family, your neighbors, your city, then Eretz Yisrael, and within Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim is higher than others. But again, does that mean that this is general? Does that mean that you can't give a penny outside your community you know, until every poor person is taken care of. Again, these are general guidelines. And the purpose is also important. And it's very interesting that you find conflicting sources. Because on the one hand, it would seem that helping poor people is a priority, because that definitely counts towards Maaser. On the other hand, Shulchan Aruch and Yerodea, Reish Mem Tes, Saif Tezayin, seems to rule that donating funds towards shul maintenance, towards the base Knesset, takes priority over the mitzvah of tzedakah to ordinary poor people. So there's a lot of conflicting information. And so you'll really find, again, Maaser, it seems, when it comes to Maaser, it seems that everyone holds that it definitely works for poor people. But there are indications that communal institutions, and especially, let's say, in a situation where you feel that, you know what, a certain community is lacking spirituality and they need shul for the shul to create spirituality, because people need to be physically nourished but also spiritually nourished. Or, you know, a place needs a mikvah, right? I'm sure when people go for their mikvah appeals, they will find plenty of sources that say that you need to support a mikvah. And, you know, this is one of these situations where, depending, when you find someone making an appeal, they will find you a source, and very often the source, and I'm not being cynical or sarcastic, there are many different sources, and those sources are legitimate, and it's really hard to know. It seems poor people, again, but it seems that when you have a functioning society, that it would seem that, you know, poor people, generally take priority. But there are so many different factors. You know, like some people say, you know, you always have people saying, why should I give money to make, you know, my shul or my base knesses fancier or the mikveh fancier when there are poor people? Well, at the same time, maybe we live in a society which maybe we wouldn't like it that much, but we need to make our shuls or our schools or our mikvahs look, you know, good quality, so that, because otherwise people won't use the mikvah, people won't, we'll say, ah, oh, this is a nebish yeshiva, it's not like the local public school, I'm going to go to public school instead. Or this shul is, look at it, it's looks like this. Again, what is that something that we should encourage, or is that a reality, and how do we fight that? So again, you're balancing different values. I would also say, there's one other comment, like, you know, regarding, again, giving maaser. So it's really hard, because again, you could argue that, you know, what's considered, you know, you deduct, many of us, many people, for many for much of our lives, We have very little money to give to Maaser, because our income less our deductions is almost nothing. It's, you know, sometimes we're getting scholarship money from, we're getting tuition assistance from the school. So but then it becomes a question, and it's a more, I don't want to say materialistic question. You know, what trips are we taking? And again, I'm not jumping on a bandwagon. I struggle with this myself. Like, what's, you know, we can always spend less and give more tzedakah. There are people who are amazing at it. And, you know, there are certain community standards. And so this is something that we're always struggling with. So I can tell you that, again, let's say someone is saving up for a bar mitzvah in a couple years. So that's legitimate. It's legitimate to save up for a bar mitzvah for a couple years. But, you know, you can always be saving up to the point where you'll never have to give maaser. As you want, you can be clever enough so you never have to give maaser. I guess that's why Rabbi Willig really was of the view that, like, just try to give them the most you can, because you can very often get around maaser. But at the same time, it's a nice thing if you can give and you try to do a calculation that works for you. So I think these are some nice general guidelines. And, you know, this is to some extent, you know, this is based on a little bit of emunah, a little bit of faith. Because, you know, we live in a world where people, you know, some people lose their jobs and people struggle financially. You never know what will happen tomorrow, and you want to try to put money away. And so this, the mitzvah tzedakah certainly is a mitzvah where we have to demonstrate a lot of emunah. So we want to try to be responsible, but also have a little emunah as well.